Are cotton water stress, age, and cultivar moderating factors of cotton fleahopper abundance and associated yield loss? Dr. Michael Brook?
Yes. And the answer is yes. So I changed the title. Cotton, yeah. Thank you. It's always a privilege to follow Tina. This is actually one other time I did this. And just come up and give my presentation, please. It's really nice. You have such a good grasp on these issues. I wanted to frame this briefly and get straight to it, but really quickly so as not to lose my time. In South Texas, cotton flea hopper is a big issue. It's like the plant bug. I know Roy Parker for many years. Some of you may know him. And he said if you average everything out across the years, cotton flea hopper is a huge issue. But any given year, it's as frustrating as can be, because I may see high populations and I don't see yield loss. And then I see what I think are low populations and I see yield loss. How this translates in the world of consultants, we will see apparently the same population levels, and you may have one consultant spray once and another consultant spray four times. So just like Tina, sometimes I try to do too much all at once in regard to a small plot, but I'm going to show you that. And one thing we saw, well, maybe it's plant water stress, dry year, wet year. And maybe it's cultivars. And everything in the literature in cultivars, some great work by my predecessor, John Benedict, and his crew, cultivar variation up to tenfold difference. Now, water stress, and of course, we all know age is a big issue in regard to damage. So that's the setup. We wanted to try to control all this geographic variation in Texas. We have a threefold difference in threshold values across the state in regard to cotton flea hopper. So we brought in my good colleague, Mick Paragiuli. He did some companion work in view of the Texas hybrids. So with that set up, the presentation, I'm going to do a brief reflection on the damage, the cultivars, the weather in dryland cotton, or in the case of Mick, irrigated cotton, two locations set up. And I'm just going to go through the experimental setup and then show you cotton flea hopper abundance and the yield and some key findings and next steps. And this has been a lot of work supported by a core project that Ryan Kurtz and his predecessor, we all know Patricia, has been very helpful and encouraging. So here's the setup. Cotton flea hopper is key. It's a myriad. Near early instars, we can detect them. We have ability to detect. It takes a lot of work, but it could be done. And the cause is these blasted cotton squares on the right. In South Texas, dryland cotton is indeed, we're in a water-limited environment. It's true dryland cotton. And even in the high plains, under the irrigating cotton, with the water restrictions coming on, they oftentimes function in a dryland system. And certain of it's certainly dryland. And in South Texas, 2 out of 10 years, we're going to have non-limiting good soil moisture. We had that in 2015. These tests were not done in 2015. But more regularly, moderate limiting, 5 out of 10 years. And 2012 was a good year. And sometimes severely limiting. We had huge drought three years in a row, and we did this test across 2 years. And we know there's past cultivar sensitivity to the aphid. Ring et al. In 1993 reported EILs varying by tenfold, huge across cultivars, and commercially available cultivars at the time. None of this, not just breeding stuff. So the current situation, what I talked about, we have different rates of flea hopper sprays and these regional threshold variation. So we wanted to try to capture or do our contribution to the confusion, sometimes I say, and maybe do a little learning along the way. So our two experimental setup in South Texas, I'm going to report to you a couple of years of work here. We did a split plot, 5 reps, pretty standard. We used natural infestations of flea hoppers. We worked 2 years in the dry years, and we have an above ground drip system in which we were able to do a dry land drought simulation, a 25% crop ET, a 75% crop ET, and a 90% full moisture profile year. We had two plantings just to vary two different age stages of cotton where we would get fleas. Our flea pressure was nice and good, 0.1 to 1.5 fleas per plant during the 2nd to the 6th week of squaring. Two cultivars, just briefly comment. one was rather pubescent and one was rather smooth. And it's insect pressure, we just manipulated it plus or minus with insecticides, tried to keep our controls flea hopper free, and then let the pressure go on the other side. That was the split. The measurements, weekly insect counts across 20 plants per plot. We did vole retention and leaf yield. In the high plains, reporting year is 2013 here. They used just one cultivar, Phytogen 367, used an artificial infestation. It was so droughty this year, even the flea hoppers couldn't survive. Multiple years of drought up there. So we did an artificial infestation at five fleas per plant, and of course he was able to vary the insect pressure, infest, no infest. And he did that the third week of squaring to mimic what they were finding up there regular years. And then there's the measurements. So the setup here on all these graphs are going to look for it like this in the South Texas. Sprayed and not sprayed, split, and we had a dry land irrigated at 75% crop ET, 100% crop ET. The parentheses at the bottom are there additional irrigated contributions to these levels to achieve it. And the nutshell for flea hoppers, the first thing looking at flea hoppers in 2012, water deficit stress definitely was an influence of flea hoppers, but very much so less than the cultivar effects, which is what we thought maybe we wouldn't see. You know, oh, water stress, you got to watch out for fleas. Fleas on the Stoneville cultivar, this particular one, and not picking on Stoneville, but just we picked some variation, was much greater than fleas on Phytogen consistency. Those are those sloping lines. Normally, we would typically see in the non-sprayed plots more flea hoppers than on the in Stoneville than on the Phytogen. The fleas did not vary across water regimes this year at all. Those are the staggered lines. If you look on the June 14th level, we just didn't see any difference at all, other than when we sprayed, we were able to get the fleas down. The variation was so great on June the 1st, although you see a different levels on those jagged, those lines going across, actually statistically you see no variation at all. Fleas certainly increased through the 6 week of squaring, and there was certainly an age of the plant effect. And in other words, fleas kept on going, is able to increase and increase during the 6 week of squaring. But there was no interactions at all. All these influences could be handled independently. So this fear about we got a water stress year and the cultivar things are really interacting, we got to be more careful. I don't know. They all have an influence, but they are just additive influences, no just synergies of influence. For 2013, the same thing, our second drought year. Water stress influence was there, but it was certainly much less than the cultivar effects. There was modest combined effects as seen. Fleas on Stoneville, again, were bigger than fleas on the Phytogen. You think, oh, that's Stoneville, but interesting story, which is what Tina saw. Fleas were certainly highest in the 6 week of squaring in the fully irrigated situation. In this case, it was so dry, fleas really loved that irrigated crop, and then we saw a blossoming up there of the fleas in the irrigated situation on the July 3rd, that right-hand slide. That's that circle, and it really is weird. We just give you one example here, but it was really real. You could go and find those fleas easily. But the water stress influence was similar across cultivars. No water stress cultivar interaction. We didn't have to worry about that. In the high plains, Meg basically found something similar, but he, of course, didn't have the cultivar influences. The flea hopper stress was not detected in his moderate thing. He really couldn't detect it in the high water stress situation as well. The orange, the control, and the blue is the flea hopper augmented. And this is his bowl counts. The bowl counts did not decrease under flea hopper pressure. There was a trend for fewer bowls when fleas were on cotton under high water stress, and this will bear out in the yield results. I'm just going to go straight to Meg's 2013 yields, you could see is all of a sudden under his high water stress and his augmented population, he had reduced yields. It was really clear and very much less so. So in his very high flea hopper pressure that he artificially induced, he went from a 28% yield loss in his high water stress to a 36% yield loss in the combined high water stress, high flea hopper stress. In South Texas, where we, for boll retention, I'm going to blow over this really quickly. We didn't see much of anything difference. We didn't see enhanced boll loss really to speak of. We saw a reduction in boll count with irrigation, the right side, dry land versus irrigated, which you would expect, but nothing more to that. What I really wanted you to show here is in South Texas in yield for 2 years, go over this really quickly, flea hopper induced yield loss was less than water induced yield loss. Everything followed. Water stress certainly reduced yield, in fact, dramatically so. By 50% reduction, the easiest slide to show is on the right, 50% yield loss. Clearly, that's a thing. Loss from fleas was modest, but there was no interaction between the two. So when you're in a water stress year, you don't have to worry about really fleas anymore. It will contribute to the damage, but no synergy involved. But there was huge cotton flea, here's the big thing, cultivars, huge effect on fleas, but it did not show up in yield. So this, I think, is maybe some contribution where you have some consultant spraying one time versus four times under the same density pressure. In other words, they could very well just be doing a great job. They're checking on damage. They're seeing these fleas are doing damage. And it could be to this cotton influence thing, which John Benedict and students knew a whole long time ago. So I think it's time to update things. I think there's a lot of variability in our cottons that our entomologists maybe aren't appreciating, at least at a science level. Key findings, combined water stress and flea hopper stress does occur, but only at this very high, heavy drought in a heavy flea hopper intensity world. We don't normally see that. It was artificially induced in the high plains. There were strong cultivar influences, did not show up in yield loss. May explain why we're seeing these variability in sprays out there. Yield trends were consistent across the two cultivars, but that phytogen was much more sensitive to the fleas. It had fewer fleas, more damage for the cultivars that we looked at. So the current situation, we're still stuck here. I do think maybe if this helped out in any way, it goes towards to future what to look at. Does combined water stress and flea hopper stress matter? Well, it does under extreme situations. But under those extreme situations with such a high yield loss to begin with, I don't know how much growers are interested in, you know, 28% yield loss in your high water stress, and then the fleas are got to augment that. It's an economic question. Do you prevent the bleeding further because of the fleas? That's an economic question. Do cultivar effects help explain spray variation? Possibly. And all I can share with, we just used two cultivars. We're transitioning our work to want to do a look at a whole bunch of cultivars because I think there's a lot more variation and sensitivity to flea hopper that we down in South Texas haven't been capturing that probably is existing, just like Benedict et al. Found out in the early 1990s. So back to the future or back to the past. Thank you.